If you want to truly improve a process, you really need to understand why you're doing the process the way you're doing it today. And the majority of the time is because whenever that process was established, the tools, the techniques, the technology, all the resources available to those folks at that time is not the same tools, technology, and resources we have today. We don't want to just go change up the process. We need to understand the intent behind why it is the way it is today.
Welcome back to Leader Up, a podcast of Army Management Staff College. Leader Up is a professional conversation where we discuss a broad range of leadership and leader development topics with an emphasis on the Army civilian professional. I'm your host, David Howie. And on today's episode of Leader Up audience, we have the course manager of the CECL BT course, that is Continuing Education for Senior Leaders, BT, Business Transformation. And this is my colleague, my coworker. This is Mr. Eddie Rayleigh. And so, Eddie, I want to bring you in and just thank you for giving up your time and being willing to talk to us today on Leader Up about CECL BT.
Thank you, David. Thank you for inviting me.
Well, you're more than welcome. I'm really looking forward to this conversation because I love CECL BT. I think it's a fun course and I think it has a lot of benefits. Let me start off with a little bit about you because I always like for our audience to get to know the faculty here at Army Management Staff College. Tell us a little bit about your background, and then maybe a little bit about how you got involved with this idea of business transformation, that field of study.
Thank you. It actually goes hand in hand. I joined the military right out of high school. I did about 8 years on active duty, and then I transitioned to be a full-time dad, but also used the GI Bill and went to college. So during the time I was in college and studying business, and mainly in finance area, a little small town I worked in, they started, this is around 96, 97 time frame. They really started looking at how we can be more efficient and more effective. They started the movement of Six Sigma. As I'm graduating college and getting my four-year degree, we started down this journey of using Six Sigma. It's a small chemical company, you know, so we did a lot of repetitious type operations and processes. And we used Six Sigma to look at the variation in how we produce things. If you know anything about manufacturing, you start off with the right way to do something, how much of the raw materials it's going to take, and then perfect process on the inside of it. On the other end of it, you'll have a quality product. So the study of that variation piqued my interest, and I began looking into it and actually started, I got my green belt in the year of 2000. So that's a little bit about the background of it.
We're going to talk about some of those topics because you used a lot of phrases in there, effectiveness, efficiency, and then you talked about Six Sigma, and we're going to get into some of those, what those mean. If I'm right, those are some of the topics that really are important in the CECL BT course.
The CECL BT course is a collaboration between, at the time, it was the Office of Business Transformation, now it's the Office of Enterprise Management and Army Management Staff College. The collaboration really wanted to put together a mid-level manager oversight graduate level course to look at business transformation in the Army enterprise as a whole. So the Army adopted this. They looked at private sector, how's things going? What are people using in the private sector? So they brought it in, and this was around 2007, 2009 timeframe. So at that time, Six Sigma, which was generated from GE and Motorola back in the day, and lean manufacturing, which evolved from the Toyota production system, was kind of combined. Both of them together is what we call today Lean and Six Sigma. What CECL BT, the transformation course was, again, is focused audience is GS 13s through 15s, kind of that mid-level management, to give them a better understanding of the transformation. How do you go from a current state to a future state from a business perspective, looking at your end-to-ends, analyzing your processes, finding waste, and we give you a definition of waste, and then improving it. It's really to engage that mid-level manager, and I think it's been very effective over the last couple of years.
You said that this is kind of designed at the 13, 14 level. We have military folks also who get into CECL PT.
It's opened up also to your senior non-commissioned officers and your majors and above. Now, saying that, you can always have an exception to the policy. So if we get, you know, a lower rank on the civilian side and the military side, we'll ask their supervisors, hey, you know, give us a recommendation. Why should this person be in this class? And again, geared towards 13 through 15s. And just because you're a 12 or you're 11 or you're a captain, you may be in a position that you are on the fast track career path, a superstar follower, and your leadership wants to get you involved in this. We certainly accept those as well.
The format and the length of the course is what? How is that laid out?
The virtual course is laid out over the course of 4 weeks. It's designed to give you 40 hours of education and about 10 hours per week. If you break that down into a one-week segment, we have in weeks beginning on Sunday night, you know, 0001, you'll have pre-work, which is reading the course materials to look through, the videos to watch. And then on Wednesday, we have a 5.5 hour of lesson time, and we cover two topics each week. After that, Thursday, Friday, all the way up till Sunday, the students will have time to work on their individual portfolios. So the course is designed for really two things. This is not your standard Army course. Everything's given to you. We try to focus it where two things are accomplished: the learning transfer from the course to the student, and also something that they can take away with. And this is what we mean by their individual portfolio. So during that 4 weeks, every deliverable homework is geared towards their organization, how they can take back to their organization and improve a process potentially.
And you use that word portfolio, and what that is, that at the end of the course, the students have, and the word is portfolio, that contains a lot of products that they've been working on that are all pointed towards some kind of a relook or redesign or reassessment of their actual home organization, correct?
That is correct. That is correct. So in the beginning, in each class, we start with opening. And from week one, what we do is start with the current state, so to speak, looking at the organization as a whole and really getting into whether or not you are in a complex adaptive system or just a complicated system. So Army Enterprises, it usually satisfies that requirement. And you're talking at the general officer level when you're talking complex adaptive systems. With that, we get into leader approaches during the first week. Once that class is over, we have the students go back and they will map their organization. They will do a high-level diagram, and this is the current state. Week two, we come back and we start talking a little bit deeper. Where you are in the organization, tell us what your end-to-end business is. And end-to-end, I'm talking about horizontal. I'm not talking about vertical, like you're in the S1 or the S2 or the S3. What is your end-to-end? Like hire to retire is a great example. The Army's end-to-end for onboarding, training, career, and retirement of their soldiers and civilians is an example of an end-to-end. So that's what we do during week two. We drill in down. Also in week two, we start talking about how do you identify waste in your process. Now, in the Lean Six Sigma world, waste is identified as anything that is not transforming the raw material or raw information into a finished product. So anything outside of that is called non-value add. It's not saying it's not required. It's just saying maybe the customer, and I'm doing the air quotes, is not willing to pay for it. The good acronym is called Tim Woods, right? Like transportation. Whenever you move in something, it's really not changing the fit, form, or function of the product. Whenever you're waiting on something, it's not changing the fit, form, or function of the product. So you go through the whole transportation, inventory, motion, waiting, over-processing, overproduction, and defects. That's Tim Wood. Those are your typical activities that consume resources that is required at your current state. When I say not willing to pay for it, it's not changing that product that your customer wants. And yes, we have customers in the Army. Whatever we're doing, producing, while we're relevant, is going to be our end product. So that's week two. Week three, we get into how do we use data analytics and leverage data in order to do that. So week three is a really good week because this is when we start identifying our different levels of business analytics, where you go from descriptive to diagnostic to predictive to prescriptive analytics. You basically using data, what it is, why are we doing what we're doing, how do we use that in order to predict and prescribe the future state, how can we use that to do better planning. The one key thing in there we talk about is key process indicators or KPIs. What are those metrics that you absolutely have to hit? Because as you know, David, we got plenty of metrics out there. We got plenty of data out there, and you can't analyze everything. So how do you drill it down to those critical few? And those are what we call the key performance indicators, KPIs. Week four, we come into the end of it. And with the two classes we have in week four is kind of geared towards that future state. We get into our another improvement methodology called business process reengineering. And we talk about how to engage stakeholders. How do we make sure that as we are doing this transformation, that we have all parties involved that are affected or affected by a change in the process? And in the capstone class is enterprise change management. Anything that we do, all these methodologies, tools, things of this nature, people have to be involved. And usually that's the biggest challenge, is the enterprise change management.
And that is a part of that process, understanding change, because my feeling or my experience has been in a big bureaucracy like we kind of work in with DOD and the Army, it's hard to get people to agree to make changes because people get in their comfort zone and they don't want to get out of it. And we're kind of asking with this CECL BT program to kind of shake things up a little bit and really look at what we're doing, why we're doing it, and is it really needed? Sometimes the bureaucracy doesn't reward those kind of questions. Have you experienced that? Do you see students that kind of have those kind of issues?
Absolutely. And honestly, David, it's not just in the military. This is people in general, right? So people in general, you know, you can think of us from two different perspectives. We are creatures of comfort. We like the current way. And we also are like water. We flow at the path of least resistance. Now, I truly believe people are good. They come to work to do good things. If they are doing things that consume resources, that's not adding value, or they doing things that will lead into, and again, air quotes, a defective product or a defect, then it's usually a process situation. Now, you take that back to the culture piece of it, and you mention how old, you know, our culture and how deep our culture is in the military, and especially the Army. Getting them to go from how we've done things forever and a day, people in general, to a new way, there's a systematic way to do that. And this is where a lot of organizations really struggle. And again, this is not just the Army, it's public sector, private sector, even in your own homes. How do we go from one way to another and make it become a way we do business? So an example of that, talk about the seatbelt you and I are a little bit older, so we can probably remember back when seatbelts was not a, it was not against the law not to wear a seatbelt. Once it became a law and it became common, then there was a change piece of that. So, oh, I forgot. Yep, here's your ticket. Oh, I got to put the seatbelt on. But now in today's time frame, we don't even think about it. You jump in your car, you put your seatbelt on. That's a great example of how do you change a culture. But now look how long that took. When you talk about changing the Army's culture of how do we be more efficient and more effective and looking at value add activities, it takes a little bit of time. That's not that the Army says, I'm going to be inefficient or I'm going to be ineffective. By no means is that. It's just the culture of that's how we've done it. And as we grow, how do we change to be more efficient? How do we be better stewards of the taxpayer dollar?
Let's say that I'm a GS-12 or GS-13 budget analyst supervisor at a Picatinny Arsenal or someplace like that, or I'm a personnel clerk somewhere at an Army depot somewhere. How does something like CECL BT, how would this course make my work environment better? What would be the benefits for those people out there to take this course? What would they learn that would be helpful for them?
Yeah, and that's a great question too. That's a great question. The concepts of transformation and more so the methodologies that are available are not, I'm not going to say widely known because the private sector is not, we looked out, but not everybody in the private sector understand. We understand from a standpoint of we want to produce quality product as best we can, consuming the least amount of resources. But what the continuous improvement all the way back to total quality management, all the way back to Deming, all the way back to the Industrial Revolution, you can look at it. And we were making product, but we wasn't cognizant of the fact that if we make product and it just sits there, it's not adding any value. We didn't have on our mind resources was plentiful. So it's just like if you have a mistake, you put it by the wayside. How does that affect the 13s and the analysts? Once they understand, and most people do, David, most people understand because if you go to most people's homes, they're very efficient, very effective. And it's like when we come to work, we do what the process tells us to do. Understanding that there's methodologies and there's a definition of waste and putting names on some of these things also starts to ring bells and highlights, hey, maybe we could do this better. So this is where that enterprise change management comes in. Most of the time, what we see is that the analysts, the people that's doing the work every single day at the value creation level, they know. They know how we can do the process better. It's just a matter of how do we get the leaders above us to engage in order to do something to change and make it a more efficient process as a whole. That's where the culture change comes in. That's the reason we put the enterprise change management as the capstone class.
In CECL BT, we do provide some tools for the students to deal with the change. And one of them is the different change management types. And I'm talking about like nudge theory, what that means, and the elevator speech, things like that. Can you just talk about kind of what those are and how those are valuable?
And there's a bunch of them in there, right? Now, the course is not designed to make anyone a practitioner. It's really designed for a good understanding at the how things work. Week two, when we talk about CPI, we go into total quality management. We talk deeply about Lean Six Sigma process mapping. How do you identify the waste? We talk about in the Six Sigma side of variation in the process. How do you use statistical analysis to really drive and look at variation? For example, there's two different types. There's common cause and there's special cause. And a lot of time we know this, but we don't have a name for it. We don't put things on it. Transition that into, like we said, the week three piece of it when we get into data analytics and those key performance indicators, we give them tools. How do you do this? You can ask folks, you know, what business are you in? Some people struggle with that. And what do I mean by struggle with that? When you talk about it from an end-to-end perspective, they know And we all know, and we tend to know, we'll focus on what we're doing on a day-to-day basis. But that's just one small piece when you're looking at it from an end-to-end. So when you get into business process reengineering, we talk about that future state map. I'll explain a little bit more the difference between CPI and BPR in just a second, but developing what the future state's going to look like. And then there's really when we start getting into the stakeholder analysis, a stakeholder inventory. You just have an opportunity and you're passing by someone, you said the elevator speech, but how do you take those opportunities to have that discussion when you bump into someone, a stakeholder or not, that may be able to help you in your transformation journey? So there's numerous products in there that they can actually take away and use and move forward in their career.
We focus on the virtual, but we have historically, and I think our goal is to have one resident CECL BT annually. Is that still the vision of this course?
It is 4 courses per year. And 3 of those are virtual, and then we have one in-resident class that's held at Fort Leavenworth. Unfortunately, this past year, it had to be converted due to budget constraints. But as far as I know of this, and hopefully, you know, everybody would love to have an in-resident class. And when you think about adult learning folks, some of them are like, I got it, the virtual class is great, but I really want to sit in the classroom. That does a couple things for me. It helps them learn. And it pulls them out of their environment that they don't get, hey, do this for me while you're doing that in the virtual classroom. 2 different types of offering, virtual and in-resident at the moment.
I just want to emphasize this point again. Each student, when they walk away from this class, they have a portfolio that they will take back. They can take back to their organization and engage with decision makers, senior leaders to attempt to deal with some of the inefficiencies, ineffectiveness that they see in their organization.
Absolutely. In the beginning, whenever we talk about diagramming organizations and complex adaptive systems, we begin in week 1, your organization. We don't want you to map the Army or map some idea of an organization. We're your organization and place a little stick figure on where you are. That's the first piece of their portfolio. So the week 2, we drive it down to where are you and what is your end-to-end? Identify opportunities for improvement. Now you're going to do a process map. So it was an organizational diagram in the beginning. Now you're getting down and doing a process map. And with that process map, you're identifying opportunities for improvement. Now these are homework deliverables at the end or applications. And each week it builds on each other. So by week 4, the portfolio is all about their organization, a potential issue that they've seen in their organization, a real life issue. And then we do a one-on-one coaching with them whenever they get ready to leave to look at the portfolio as a whole. That portfolio goes back to what I was talking about earlier, the transfer of knowledge. But also something that can be used and taken away from the class. We just don't want to leave the class and here's your certificate and never think about it again. Now, here's a product. Take it back to your leader, your decision makers, and have a discussion about a potential, this is what we can do. So that's what they walk away with, that portfolio.
And there's something that you said that I wanted to kind of come back to. The ideas and the concepts that we talk about in a lot of classes are like this. People understand the ideas innately. They can see ineffectiveness and inefficiency when they see it in their workplace. But what we do is we give them a term to use to identify it, and we give them a definition so that they can now talk about it in a way that gives us a common level of terms, where we can talk about things and they have meaning. And when we interact with other practitioners, there's a common language that we're talking about so that everybody's on the same sheet of music.
Absolutely. And I would add to that a common methodology. Again, back to people, we fix things. And you think about the folks in the Army, like, hey, we got a problem, let's go fix it. What the methodologies do And this is very important. Before you fix anything or before you try to improve anything, you really have to understand why you're doing what you're doing. So this is where in week two, we start driving down to root cause analysis. So take what a root cause analysis, you know, just is kind of common sense, but we fix stuff. Take a picture of a tree. And when you see the tree, you got nice, pretty green leaves on it. What happens when the leaves turn brown? Most people look and say, oh, that tree is sick. Why is it sick? What's causing it to be sick? Is it a disease? Is it insects? You know, we don't know, but we know the symptom. So most of the time we try to fix the symptom. Well, really you have to get down to the root of that tree to figure out the why. Why is it sick? That's where you have to do your improvement. So when you do the improvement at the symptoms level, you're not fixing the root cause. You have to dig down to the root cause if you want to truly, and I say fix, you know, this is a common word, but if you want to truly improve a process, you really need to understand why you're doing the process the way you're doing it today. And the majority of the time, David, is because whenever that process was established, the tools, the techniques, the technology, all the resources available to those folks at that time is not the same tools, technology, and resources we have today. Today, there's more efficient tools that we can use, but we don't want to just go change up the process. We need to understand the intent behind why it is the way it is today. So that's a great tool that we talk about also, root cause analysis.
I think it's a human temptation to deal with the symptom because it feels good in the moment to just go tell somebody, don't do that anymore, or stop doing that, or start doing this. And a lot of times when we just attack that symptom, we really make the problem worse. Do you agree with that? Do you see that?
Yep. And whether or not it makes it worse, but it does not address the problem. So again, if you're coughing, my immediate reaction is, let me give you a cough drop. So I'm addressing the symptom, but I'm not addressing why you're coughing. And back to people, we like to fix things and we like to immediately have that instant gratification of look, it's fixed. But you know as well as I do, if you don't address that root cause, the cough's not going to go away. As soon as that cough drop's gone, you're going to start coughing again. Whenever you're addressing a root cause, you have to invest the time and resources to do the analysis to go back to figure out why. And a lot of times, and that's not an immediate gratification because it takes time, it takes resources, it takes digging. Why are we doing what we're doing? And that's where we get into the, okay, we don't have time for that. We got to go. Give them a cough drop and let's keep going.
So I would like to talk about some of the specific topics that we talk about in CECL BT. I just find these interesting. And like we said earlier, people, I think, understand these. But when we give them a definition and a name, it helps people understand them a little bit better. Let's talk a little bit about the difference between effectiveness and efficiency. What is the difference between those two things?
And that's a great question, too. So let's start with effectiveness. If you want a job or an end product in a specific way, your current process, how effective is it to hitting that target? How effective is it to hitting that target? It's really the accomplishment of it when you talk about effectiveness. So when you talk about efficiency, am I utilizing the right amount, no more, no less, of the resources required to hit that target? So one is the actual, am I hitting the target, the effectiveness? The other one is, am I only using the least amount of resources I need to hit that target? No more, no less. And this is kind of where it goes back. And I say as people in general, we're very cognizant of the efficiency piece of it because we pay for it out of our pockets, whatever it is. But it seems like when we go into a work environment, whether it be the Army or private sector, it's not coming out of my pocket. Okay, if I've got a little bit of waste, we just call it collateral damage. Well, do we need to call it collateral damage, or is there a better way that I don't have that waste? And this is where it comes back to being good stewards of taxpayers' dollars. Saying all of that, you know, I have to keep emphasizing, you have to address the root to figure out why they were doing it that way, why the process is set up the way it is today. And 9 out of 10 times, it was set up the best that they could at that time based off the resources that they had, the technology that they had available at that time. Back to the Industrial Revolution, you see that, right? It's just go, go, go. We producing stuff, but how much waste did we produce then? How much waste are we producing now? And waste is identified as the things that folks are not willing to pay for. Hopefully that answered your question, but are we making what we say we're going to make right the first time? Are we using only the amount of resources that we need in order to do that? Efficiency.
Absolutely. And then the other two terms that I hear thrown together a lot, and I actually heard this for a long time before I knew they were different, and that's Lean and Six Sigma. You talked a little bit about the difference, but those two things are kind of thrown together now, but they mean two different things in this business transformation world. So can you just talk about what Lean is and what Six Sigma is?
And you're spot on. They're two different things, but they're both addressing the same thing, waste, whether or not it be in steps from a Lean perspective or variation from a Six Sigma. So let's dig it a little deeper. When you hear that term, you'll think statistics. So Six Sigma is really a statistical process control methodology that if you are producing, let's take Bank of America. They had a commercial not too long ago, and they said, we don't process 100,000 checks a day. We process one and duplicate it 100,000 times. Now, that's where you get into Six Sigma and statistical analysis and taking samples and trying to infer on the population based off of a sample. So when you have mass production, you're producing a lot, you don't look and see every single piece. You produce one and you try to replicate it the same way. Six Sigma really looks at variation in your process. And if it takes more resources one time and it takes less one time, how can you get it where it's taking the same amount the exact same time? How can you do the process the same time? And this is where that term Six Sigma quality comes into play. For example, is 99% good enough? The term's called defects per million opportunity. If you are a Six Sigma quality level production facility or your office, whatever you produce, that means out of a million opportunities, you're producing 99.9997% of the time quality one product, or you only have 3.4 defects per million opportunity. That's the mindset behind the Six Sigma piece. The Lean manufacturing piece, and this goes back to Deming, and it really, the origins of it is out of the Toyota production system that keeps going back to after World War II, whenever the country was totally destroyed. They had to rebuild. They had to rebuild everything. So they looked at the steps in their processes. And each process, they would map it out and look at the steps and say, is this activity adding value? Meaning what the customer, when we say the customer is willing to pay for, but is it adding value to what we're trying to do or is it not? If it's not, we're going to try to minimize it in the form of waste. It may be required at the time, but how do we improve it where we don't have to do that anymore? So quality inspections is a great example. In the Toyota production system, whenever you think about the cars, the manufacturer, the cars coming down the line, immediately, if a defect is identified, they will stop the line. The worker on the line will stop the line and fix it because they know if you fix it at the source, it's going to be less wasteful than it goes through and it gets all the way to the customer. So that dollar amount multiplies when it gets to the customer. That's the reason a lot of terms in the lean manufacturing are Japanese terms because that's where it originated from, the Toyota production system. It now is called lean manufacturing. Somewhere around 2000, early 2000s, they combined both of them together. because the majority of the time, you can use both methodologies on one project. It's just a matter of when do I do statistical analysis, when do I do waste analysis. But both of those, variation is waste and non-value-added steps is waste. That's how they came together as Lean Six Sigma.
And there's a piece of that Toyota philosophy that invites senior leaders to go down to the point of where the actual problem is or where the work is being done. Can you just talk a little bit about the importance of that, why they focus on that, and why that's important?
Yeah, so there's different terms for waste. Muda, Muri in the lean manufacturing world is waste. But sitting in a boardroom or sitting in an engineering room, you can't really see the process, right? You can't really see it's happening. So you can ask an engineer, what's happening? Well, it shouldn't be happening because everything's engineered right. Or in my world, the chemist, no, the formulation's right. And that's where that S comes into play on Tim Woods, that subutilized innovation, or go to the value creation level where it's actually happening. Oh, well, we have a bad valve here, or this belt's not running as fast as it should. So you actually see it. The terminology for that is Gimbi Gimbatsu, go see and look at the waste. So you have to get down and actually see it. The concept behind that is once you see it and the magnitude of it, then you have more buy-in to fix what's causing it.
And that also takes us out of there's a problem. Well, this is what we did 15 years ago. Let's just do that again because it worked 15 years ago, right?
Yep. Oh, and that's kind of where I go back to. And it's, you know, we say fix or if it's broke, but there's also an improvement piece on them. The concept is we perfectly designed today to get the results we're getting today. Well, if they developed it today, and I say whoever, the process 15 years ago, back to my comment about they developed with the absolute best technology they had, the resources they had, everything that was involved to produce that, and it worked fine. Can we do it faster? Can we do it better? Can we do it with less variation if you're on the Six Sigma side today based off the technology and resources we have today? Absolutely. So it's so important to understand that root cause. Because what you don't want to do is just fix the leaves on the tree. You want to go back to say, why is the leaves on the tree green? And then you fix it at that point. So good point.
You know, I saw a news story past couple of days about how NFL place kickers have become so much more accurate in the past, I think, 5 years or so. And they go through this process. Do they not of analyzing their motion, wasted energy, anything in there that doesn't help that ball go further or go straighter? They look time and time again to make that process better. That's a similar process, is it not?
Anything and everything we do is a process. And that's a great example of you can use Lean and Six Sigma in any industry. You can use it at home. You can use it anywhere. You know, think about the technology that sports has now, and you hear all these statistics coming behind it. They measure every single thing. Take golf, for example. How do you improve your swing? You know, you can go to a golf lab now, and they will analyze your swing, and it may be just a minor correction or minor improvement instead of slicing it to now you got a straight drive. Same with kickers, same with baseball. The racing industry, same way. There's a video out there. I can't think of it right off the top of my head, but back during the day, like at the Indianapolis 500, they bring the car into the pit and it takes like 14 minutes, right? And I say 14 minutes, it takes a long time to get them out of the pit. And now you're talking about seconds. How did they get from minutes to seconds? You have to analyze your process. Back then, that was the best they had. They didn't just change it. They analyzed, okay, what do we have that we can do better now? These days. So it applies to anything, any industry.
And I want to ask about two more things that I find this fascinating topics that we talk about in Cecil BT, and that's the difference between CPI and BPR, what the difference is between those two.
That's a great question also, because each one of them have their own right, right? So CPI, it is called continuous process improvement. It's looking at how do we improve our process incrementally. Lean Six Sigma can do breakthrough, but most of the time it's used for let's map out our current process, identify the waste, and let's improve it. Business process reengineering is a concept that you totally obliterate the process that you have now and start from scratch. And a lot of times this is in the business system. So you think about how many business systems the Army has and all the different system architects that we have. What BPR and in the origin of it, you know, the Hammer, Mr. Hammer, was talking about is cheaper and more efficient and effective instead of trying to fix the old system and do add-ons, just completely remove it and engineer a brand new system. So the Army just went through one with, on the personnel side, it's called IPSAE. And forgive me, I don't know what the acronym is, but it's basically, you know, the human resources, how do we capture all the records and everything? A whole brand new system. So instead of trying to, let's update this old software, let's update this old hardware, let's completely remove it and start from scratch. If we wanted it to be the most efficient, how would it look? And this is where you get into business process reengineering. And they both have their place in improvement. They both have their place in improvement. So it's not one versus the other. It's not CPI versus BPR. It's when do I use which methodology? And that's the biggest difference between them.
And so, Eddie Rayleigh, I want to thank you for giving up your time today and being a guest on Leader Up and talking about the CECL BT program. Thank you so much for coming and talking to our Leader Up audience about this course.
Absolutely, David. Thank you. And I enjoyed it. And thank you for the great questions.
You're more than welcome, Eddie. And Leader Up audience, if you had trouble figuring out which one of us was talking, we are from the same part of the country. We're both from South Carolina, so you may hear a little bit of similarities between us. And so, Leader Up audience, what did you hear? Have you taken CECL BT? Are you aware in your organization of inefficiencies, ineffectiveness? Is there a better way for you to get your processes done? Do you know what your primary process is that you're supposed to be working on in your organization? If that's something that you're interested in, you might consider taking the CECL BT class. Come visit our website. We've got the dates and all the requirements and all that so that you can sign up and take that class. As always, I invite you to subscribe to our podcast. And join us again next time for another edition of Leader Up.
As always, if you have any questions or feedback or would like to learn more about our podcast, please check the description for our email and for our website. Thanks for listening.